Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, it is not the role of any other country to determine Egypt's leaders. Only the Egyptian people can do that. What is clear, and what I indicated tonight to President Mubarak, is my belief that an orderly transition must be meaningful, it must be peaceful, and it must begin now.
And that was last night. Just a short time ago, British Prime Minister David Cameron said transfer in power of power in Egypt must happen faster. Both Cameron and now UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon this morning condemned the violence in Egypt, calling attacks on demonstrators unacceptable. The latest that we're getting right now from the Associated Press is that pro- and anti-government supporters are clashing in Cairo's central Tahrir Square, where thousands of demonstrators calling for the ouster of President Hosni Mubarak have been keeping that vigil for days. An Associated Press reporter saw the two sides hitting each other with sticks, and some were injured with their heads bleeding. We also have earlier reports of scenes of chaos, pitched fighting, even stones thrown, protesters dragging attackers off their horses, some of them on horses. So let's talk about what's going on and continue to drill deeper below the headlines. Joining me now, Steve Clemens, director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and the man behind the popular political blog, The Washington Note. He worked in foreign policy in the Clinton administration. And shortly we'll also be joined by Tala Al-Husri, a former Brian Lehrer Show intern who is now a freelance Jordanian journalist, on the phone from Amman. But first, Steve Clemens, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be with you, Brian. You know, very historic stuff going on.
Indeed.
High stakes.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And now with this very ugly turn after a week of what, despite the fear of petty street crime, was also extremely exhilarating, now I think it's entirely changed.
I think we've been through this before. In Tiananmen, we had the euphoria to see of what was going on in the Green Movement in Iran, and you always get to a point where or in Marcos in the Philippines, either you get to a point where the security forces, you know, crack down and try and burst the bubble of euphoria and support, and what you really need to measure and test whether the public and these, you know, protesting citizens will yield the ground or not. And you know, the very dark side of these things. And right now, I think we're right at the edge of either a lot of violence and incredible turmoil in Egypt, or hopefully Mr. Mubarak gets the signal and realizes he's gonna you know, leave this horrid legacy after 30 years in office. So,
how much is it clear to you at this point whether this is coordinated violence against the protesters by the Mubarak administration, or kind of spontaneous clashes of two sides with pro-Mubarak demonstrators now appearing?
I just got off the phone with someone who got out of Egypt last night, a very prominent Palestinian-American who knows Mubarak, Gamal Mubarak, and is now in Amman, Jordan, in the same place your intern is. And this is someone who believes that Mubarak needs to go, and told me definitively that Gamal Mubarak, who's, I guess, in London, and others around the Mubarak clan, if you will, are animating these renta thugs. They were clear, you know, last night in Anderson Cooper, and that they've begun to mobilize and use money to basically hire thugs to come in puncture and drive in this. And the biggest thing that concerns me right now are reports coming into me from various other people that I know who are in Tahrir Square, but also in Alexandria, who are telling me that the military, the army, is sitting and watching by people get beaten badly and dragged through the street by some of these thugs, and the army is not intervening to defend those who were peacefully protesting. So this is very disconcerting.
Indeed. What about the role of the army? Because when they were standing by and allowing the protests to happen, they were seen as kind of taking the people's side. Then the army turned around after Mubarak's speech last night when he said he wouldn't run for re-election and said, okay, folks, that's enough. Now you should end the protests. There are going to be elections and a new constitution. Now they're standing by as these clashes are taking place. The question for days has been, which side is the military on? Do we now have an answer?
The Army is clearly hedging. We don't have an answer. The Army continues to hedge, and the Army is saying, you know, we're the backbone of the country. We're the, you know, the soul of the nation, protectors of the state, that the we have a foot in leadership and a foot in the public. They are they've committed. It's very clear to a process. It doesn't feel democratic at all to those of us who are watching on the outside, but the Army is going through methodic, incremental steps. They're trying to demonstrate change. The appointment of Suleiman, the declaration that Mubarak would step down, that there would be elections and constitution, and they are trying to impose order and structure despite near anarchy and chaos everywhere else, and not yield to the chaos and not yield to these impulses. And fundamentally, what's going to happen, I fear, and I think it's the bind the president is in, President Obama is in, and his team, is whether or not that incremental change, Mubarak plus or Mubarak incrementalism, if you will be something that the broad public that's invested so much in disrupting their economy, their lives, and putting themselves out like this, whether that will be acceptable or not, and whether you have a much more serious kind of revolution that said no to all of this. And we just don't know the answer to that. And that's why I fear I've been saying all through this the last several days in many media interviews, don't get too swayed by what you see. This could turn into Tiananmen. It could turn in again to what we saw in Iran. This is a regime with enormous capacity for brutality and the ability to, I think, even a greater brutality and greater capacity to potentially turn on these citizens than we've seen in Iran.
Steve Clemens from the political blog The Washington Note, as we discuss the latest developments in Egypt, and we'll bring in Tala al-Husri and Amman in a minute. But how disturbing do you think it is for the Obama administration that while Mubarak says he will not run for re-election, he did not say that his son, who you mentioned before, Gamal Mubarak, would not run? That goes against what the administration in Washington wanted, right?
Yeah, I think the media, in fact, I've been so busy that I haven't been blogging much. I've been more on TV and commenting and whatnot. But I think that Gamal Mubarak is a key issue that has not been getting much attention anywhere in the media here, but it certainly does matter in the signaling and framing that Egyptian citizens are talking about. I'm hearing it from a number of people that there is great rage and frustration that Gamal Mubarak is the one, even more than his father, who is looked at as the one who engineered the electoral fraud in the last election, delivering, you know, 90% plus to the NDP, which is, you know, as one commentator said, he over-succeeded in his fraud. That Gamal Mubarak has been refusing to resign his position in the NDP, and Gamal Mubarak behind the scenes may be the ones really responsible for animating, because he's the one who has been overseeing for the NDP this infrastructure around the country of the, we'll call them the popular assets that party controls and can get to. I think that people should be talking about Gamal and expecting Gamal to come out and resign his post and position. It's very interesting that the president of Yemen has just come out and said that he's not going to stand for election next term, nor will his son.
Yes.
And that hasn't happened in Egypt, and it's beginning to get some echo effect among the people and citizens, as I understand it.
Also joining us now, another Brian Lehrer Show intern makes good, now a freelance journalist in Amman, Jordan, Tala al-Husri. Hi, Tala. Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Nice to talk to you again, and you have a great line from Amman Jordan, better than what we usually get from Brooklyn. Is the change on the streets of Cairo resonating in Amman, where there have also been protests in recent days?
Definitely. People have definitely felt tension. There's definitely been frustration, but I think it's absolutely nothing compared to what's going on in Egypt right now. Everything's been going on normally. Schools are functioning normally. Universities are going on fine. Everyone's going to work. Everything's normal. And I think the media really exaggerated everything. I mean, it seems much more dramatic than it actually was, that the ministry was disbanded and that the prime minister was asked to resign. But actually, that's very normal in Jordan. That happens pretty often. And the now ex prime minister had been prime minister for a year and a month. So that's a normal amount of time for someone to be prime minister here.
Yes, I gather the numbers we have are 8 times the prime minister was dismissed in the last 12 years. And nonetheless, do you think that King Abdullah is not concerned that the pro-democracy wave will spread to his country? It is, after all, a monarchy.
No, there's definitely some concern, and that's why the new prime minister is supposed to be in charge of reform and increase the democracy here. But I really don't think that he's concerned that his position as the king and the monarchy in general is threatened.
How popular? Oh, by the way, I should mention that Tala al-Husri has a blog post up now on our politics website. It's a free country. On her impressions of what's happening in Jordan. Tala, is there popular support for the king, unlike
Definitely.
For Mubarak in Egypt? It's hard for Americans to think that there would be popular support for a monarch because we're so oriented toward democracy. But is there?
Definitely. There's a lot of support for the monarchy. They've provided the country with stability, which is not taken for granted here for decades. They're really, really, really popular with, I'd say, the majority of the Jordanian people.
What's the source of that popularity?
I think the current King Abdullah's father, King Hussein, was extremely popular because he grew up with the country, and the country was very basic when he first became king, and he developed it and modernized it and put Jordan on the map. And the economy is doing well. It's a stable country amidst chaos. So I think all these factors make the monarchy very popular.
Tala al-Husri, former Brian Lehrer Show intern, freelance journalist in Amman, Jordan. You can read her blog post on the situation in Jordan on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Tala, thank you very much. We'll be in touch.
Thank you.
And back to Steve Clemens from the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and blogger of the Washington Note. Steve, I wonder what you think generally about the region as things get ugly in Egypt. There was this sense, as the Tunisia government fell so quickly, as there seemed to be all this momentum with peaceful demonstrations in Egypt that seemed on the verge of toppling Mubarak, that things were going to go country to country to country. If there's some kind of a horrific, violent crackdown in Cairo now, does that stop the momentum elsewhere?
I don't think so, but I think we're all speculating. There were so few people that expected to see what we've been seeing, and I think underestimated the impact of what was seen in Tunisia. That took quite a while. I mean, while Al Jazeera was copying this, you know, and had their cameras on all of this full force, it took a while for the U.S. media to realize there's a trend going on, and I even think in the U.S. government that's true. But I think that, you know, one person I was with night before last, General Brent Scowcroft, you know, made the comment that there's something very infectious, very viral about what we're seeing, and no matter which way it goes, this is potentially going to have an impact throughout the region. A violent crackdown that kills lots of people, if that's the direction we're going to go, could be animating and anger many. You have to remember that the Muslim Brotherhood, some people, I think, basically characterize and caricature the Muslim Brotherhood as almost being al-Qaeda, and that's in my view completely inaccurate. The Muslim Brotherhood is the backbone of political opposition in many of these countries in which there are totalitarian leaders. Most of them have moved away long ago from violent tactics, from terrorism, so-called terrorism. Peter Bergen, who's a real expert in this issue, has been making this point repeatedly, and I'm pleased that he has, that they also have been the ones that have been most talking about democracy in these countries, and so it's hard to distinguish between protesting Democrats and those tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, even though in Egypt I think the protests we're seeing are secular and far more broad-based, far more economic-based. But when you look across the region, I think that whether or not the protesters in Egypt succeed or whether the NDP succeeds and the army succeeds in a violent crackdown, I suspect that Jordan is going to have trouble. And we've seen this. We've seen some preemptive moves by the king to disband his government. We've seen preemptive moves in Yemen now. I think I've talked to a lot of friends in Syria who are very concerned about what the implications of this are in Syria. So I suspect that what we're seeing in Egypt is not going to be the end of this story. This is not going to be the last earthquake in the region.
Two things real quick, and we're already over time, but you mentioned Peter Bergen on CNN doing that analysis. He comes on this show, too, and we hope to have him back soon. Mm-hmm. But I heard somebody else on CNN last night say that Iran, rather than arguing for order or some kind of crackdown, has actually been supporting the protesters in Egypt in its public statements. Are you familiar with that? And what would Iran's strategy?
That is true. It is an interesting turn. And the reason that it's a very interesting turn, because Iran sees itself, its leaders, as being supportive of elements of the Muslim Brotherhood and who they see as part of this protest. This protest is much larger than the Islamists, and the Muslim Brotherhood has many different factions, but some of those factions have been receiving direct support from Iran. And of course, Iran is also a patron of Hamas and Hezbollah. Iran
is
expressing support for those folks, and I think that what you see in the street is sort of a rise up of all of these against someone who's been an enemy of Iran, and that's Mubarak. So it's a realpolitik move from Iran.
That could be a power struggle to come if an opposition coalition does gain power. Would a pro-Iran element of the Muslim Brotherhood rise to some kind of prominence? Last thing, I know you need to go in a minute.
Sure.
Thomas Friedman, since you're the director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation. In his New York Times column today, he says Obama should put his own Israeli-Palestinian peace plan on the table right now and demand that the two sides negotiate without any preconditions, that this all actually gives him an opportunity to do that. Do you agree?
Tom Friedman's right. He's absolutely right. I mean, one of the dirty truths is while people are not in the streets because Palestine hasn't been set up as its own state with a secure Israel, that's not what's driving them. Part of what is driving them is the fact that they've been dealing with a dictator who's been supported in his neighborhood in part by the United States and Europe for a long time, in part to keep one of the key peace partners of Israel in place, and that we were willing to turn a blind eye to a lot of stuff to hold that together. Think how different the world would have been in that whole region would have been had you had a normalization between 57 other Arab and Muslim states with Israel. If Palestine had been delivered on, we wouldn't need Mubarak as much. We would not have made such an investment in him were there a more normalized state of affairs. And it shows you how huge the cost is. And right now, Palestine is in disarray and divided. The region's in disarray. It's very plastic. And Friedman is right that this is a key moment where Obama can demonstrate bold visionary leadership, take advantage of this quicksand moment, and put some structure and vision in place and create his own weather that makes the region adapt to that, rather than waiting for stability and sanity among these players in the region about their own interests. And so I think Tom hit a big bullseye on today's piece.
Steve Clemens, director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and the man behind the popular political blog, The Washington Note. Steve, as always, thanks a lot.
Excellent, Brian. Thank you.
And again, the latest from Tahrir Square in downtown Cairo as things get ugly there. Pro-democracy supporters and supporters of President Hosni Mubarak, says the AP, are facing off at a front line next to the Egyptian Museum, where they crouched behind abandoned trucks, the protesters did, hurling chunks of concrete and bottles at each other, really the two sides. Government supporters waved machetes, and entire rooftops of several nearby buildings were covered with their fighters, who hurled rocks, bricks, and firebombs on the crowd below and tearing up satellite dishes to use as shields, government backers galloping in on horses and camels. You could only imagine the scene. And by the way, on this AP language of supporters and opponents of the president battling each other as if they are equal, we get this tweet in the last few minutes from Mona Eltahawy, the pro-democracy Egyptian-born columnist who's been a guest on this show several times recently. She tweets, "I beg of you, do not say pro-Mubarak protesters. They are thugs, hired thugs." Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Could the pro-democracy movement in North Africa spread to sub-Saharan Africa? We'll talk to a civil rights activist from Uganda for a few minutes next. Stay with us.